Our guest is Sylvia Trist. She's a certified social worker in private practice here in our area. She is with Conflict Resolution Associates. And as we explore this topic, we invite you to call in. Maybe you have comments based on your own experiences, or you have questions. We'd be happy to take either of those things. Here in Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. Toll free, anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. And at any point here, if you have questions, you want to be a part of our conversation, all you need to do is pick up the telephone and call us. Thanks very much for coming over, spend the time with us.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
I suppose most people, when they think about discipline, unfortunately, they do think about punishment, or at least they think about sanctions. So I guess when parents start talking about discipline and when they look for advice, often what they're saying is, when my child does something I don't want him or her to do, what's the best way to come down on him? I mean, they're looking for, and they've probably been told enough that, well, it's not, spanking is not good, so we shouldn't use physical punishment. So they're looking for creative sanctions. But that's probably not the best way to really think about discipline.
Well, right. First of all, I'd like to say I don't think discipline and punishment are the same thing, although the line gets pretty hazy sometimes. But I think if you think about discipline as punishment, you're going to run into trouble. It is. Self-discipline is one kind of discipline, and I think if you look at it that way, you can see that it's not the same, because if I discipline myself to get a certain thing done by a certain deadline, I have a paper to write, or I'm going to give a talk or whatever, then I don't consider that self-punishment. What it is ordering of your environment, ordering of your time, and controlling and scheduling time and events so that they go in an orderly progression.
So it's better to think of it as not so much consequences as it is the way you would like to think of it and have your children think about it is expectations. I mean, it's not so much if you don't do what I want you to do, this is what's going to happen to you. What you ought to do is put the influence on, here's what I would like you to do, and have them think of it as a way to, a set of expectations rather than so much punishment or consequences.
Right. It's a way to live. And consequences are part of it, as they are for all of us. You know, if you don't get here in time to put on your 10 o'clock show, there are likely to be some consequences. So, you know, all of us have things we need to do and consequences if we don't do them. But in general, discipline is the way you live your life, and those consequences are only one small part of it. And expectations, I think, that's a very good point, because I think that's plays a very large part in discipline and in the success you feel in having your child behave like you want him or her to behave.
Mm-hmm. And, but then that also points, though, to another problem, I think, sometimes in the way we think about it, is that, a parent who has some problems will say, now, how is it that I can get my child to do what I want them to do? And that sort of implies the notion that you can do that, that you can really make somebody else do what you want them to. And, kids are smaller than we are, so maybe for a while you can do that, but there's not too long you can get away with that. And certainly you couldn't, with another adult, you really couldn't do that. We couldn't deal with each other as adults the way we often deal with children, because the size factor is not so important anymore.
Yeah, good point. In point of fact, each of us controls only ourselves. And you can choose your own behavior so that it affects another's behavior in the way you want their behavior to be. You can be like, your behavior can be the precipitating factor. But really, while you can maybe physically force a small child to do something, what you really want is to change how they think about it and those external controls will last only as long as you can exert physical force on that person. And when you think about it, if I don't happen to like one of the shows you did last week, I don't come up and punch you in the chin, you know,
next time
I see you.
I hope not.
And generally, adults don't deal with each other that way. If you think of it like that, like you were pointing out, if you think of it like you would, how do you get another adult to do what you want him to do? It's basically the same principle you have to use with kids, because you can't use physical force, or usually you don't have the power to use coercion with another adult. So you've got to change your own behavior in order to get theirs to change.
Well, you say that respect is very important in discipline. I guess we hope in our relationships with each other that respect is important, and it's also important where children are concerned. And you suggest you might think about the ways in which you relate with the other adults in your life first, and then see if you can transfer that to the way you relate to children. Now, how exactly do you mean that?
Well, for instance, are you able to say, I'm sorry to your children when you've been wrong, even when they have the audacity to point it out to you, and probably not too nicely? And do you show appreciation when they're well-behaved or they do something nice? Now, that I found in my own experience that really works. When my two younger children, who are now 10 and 12, were about 3 and 5, we did something special one time, and I can't even remember what it was, but they told me, thank you, when it was over. Now, I don't know how we ever got to that point, but we did, and I told them, wow, that really makes me feel good when you tell me thank you. When I do something nice for you, it makes me want to do it again. And they've been real consistent ever since then. When we do something special, when I buy them something, even if it's stuff for school, they're very careful about saying, thank you for doing this for me. And that's very rewarding to me, makes me want to do more things for them, and so on. And it escalates. Bad things can escalate, and good things can escalate, too. Whatever behavior is noticed generally expands, generally grows. So if you're going to focus on negative behavior, if that's where the child is getting the attention, that's likely to grow. And if you focus on the positive behavior, and sometimes that means overlooking some things that are annoying. You know, if they get too annoying, you can't just let them go. But anyway, if you emphasize what they're doing right, they're more likely to do more of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. The things that you dwell on the most are the things that are
worthy of attention.
Yeah.
Right.
Our guest this morning is Sylvia Trist. She's a certified social worker. She was in private practice here in our area. We're talking about discipline. And again, you have questions, or perhaps more importantly, you have some experiences you'd like to share with us. You can give us a call. The number is 333-9455. Toll free, anywhere that you hear us, 800-222-9455. Something that we talked about just before we got started is this notion that what you really hope, the point that you're hoping to get to with your kids is that that they will in fact do what you want,
right?
But not because you're going to whack them if they don't. And what you're really hoping is that the motivation for doing it will somehow come from them, and not because there's punishment, or even not because there's, you know, you say, well, if you're really good, we'll take you out and we'll have ice cream or something like that. And this, I think, is one of the toughest things about it. You want the person to be, you know, be their own motivation, and that's very difficult. And how do you work towards that point?
Well, one of the ways is to control the environment and limit and manipulate the choices. I know manipulate is kind of a bad word, but we all do some of it all the time. The thing about punishment is that a person is doing it because of fear, or whatever they're expected to do. They're afraid of getting whacked. They're afraid of whatever kind of losing their job, whatever. And what you want, basically you want your children when they're growing up to be behaving in a way you'd be proud of, and you want that to come from within and not because they're worried you're going to call up and say, yeah, somebody reported I saw you skipping on the street or whatever. And you have to set up the environment so that it's conducive to that. I had one mother who told me, I made a home visit, and she was in one of my parenting classes last spring and was really interested in the theory and contributed a lot. And I was really surprised to see her kind of bark commands at her kids to do this or do that and go in the next room and get out of her hair and so on in ways I wouldn't have expected from her. So I asked her about it. And she said, well, I tried the democratic method for a while and it didn't work. Well, basically, what she did is she kind of let go and expected that everything was going to turn out the way she wanted it to turn out. So we talked about some things she could do to set up the environment in a way that gave two choices that were fairly equal to her, but not equal to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Her daughter was about, mid-elementary school. And I guess that in that family, taking a shower on your own was a privilege. Up to then, she'd been allowed to take baths. So the mother wanted her to make her bed every morning. So she set it up. We talked about this, and she set it up with her daughter that on the days that she made her bed, she could take a shower. And it was really equal to the mother whether the daughter took a shower or a bath. It wasn't all the same to the daughter. So it did matter to the mother whether or not the daughter made the bed, but we talked about being able to leave that and ignore it and let the other reward take its take over, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
And she did report success with that. But it does mean when you set up something, a choice like that, you have to be able to live with both the alternatives. When one of my older kids was supposed to clean up the kitchen, and I know a lot of mothers who would, after a couple of hours, they'd get real impatient and they'd go in there and do it. I kind of steeled myself and walked away and went in the other room, and there wasn't a whole lot of cooking done and so on until the kitchen got cleaned up. But if you're going to set up a choice like that, you have to live with both of the alternatives. And also, I think sometimes rewards are very useful. My 10-year-old son, last year, his school has a really excellent reading program with a lot of incentives. For every 300 pages, you got your name on a little duck or pebble on the river or whatever, and it got put up on a wall, and you got a bookmark or a plastic book bag or something. And he said to me, I just do it for the rewards. But that's okay, because he was reading. And the whole point is, he was reading, he was getting the habit. And a lot of what we do in life, we maybe do for the rewards, and then you kind of get in the habit, and it's really not so bad after all. Like the little girl making her bed, you get in kind of a routine where it seems like that's just how your day goes.
Hmm.
And it at least gets the person acquainted.
Well, we have a caller here to talk with. Why don't we do that on our toll-free line? The local lines are open, too, if you'd like to call in, 333-9455. That's the local number. Somebody right here on our toll-free line. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, I appreciate your taking my call. I also appreciate the topic today. It seems to me that the people that have the most trouble with their children are the people that think there are two classes of human beings, grown-ups and young people younger than they are, children. And one of the things I think that upsets me dreadfully is the people that, just sort of like a cartoon image that say they hit their child and say, why did you hit somebody smaller than you? I find that is just so inconsistent because they don't realize they're also hitting someone smaller than they are. I think consistency is very important, and not having the feeling that, well, I'm bigger than you are, and I have all the power, and you don't have any. We've had, I think, pretty good success with our three children, who are, the youngest one is in junior in high school, and we do not spank, who never did, and we never did any of that, and yet without having any power plays, I think really they have known who's boss and are very glad to, because we have also, as you said, shown appreciation when they do the right things. And, I think there's too much physical punishment, really.
Sounds like you're doing everything right.
Yeah. Don't you? And I kind of gathered that you agree that way, too. Do you believe in spanking?
No, not really. That,
no.
I think it's... The only time I think spanking can be justified is if there's a real clear and present danger, like a one-year-old running out into the street, and you have to make that clear to the child real quickly.
Yes, I would agree with that, too.
But on the whole, I think it's a real violation of the person that child is.
Yes.
And I agree with you totally. I think that spanking it's a very ineffective way to make something change. And if you are able to make a change, it's only temporary. It's like till you're out of sight.
Yes. And I can also understand then why they say that abused children become abusive parents, because they have seen that when you get to be a grown-up, you get to hit, and you get to hit defenseless people, and that's fine. Culture agrees that you should.
Right. They also don't really know anything else.
Yes, and that's right. And so I think that it goes a lot better with firm and fair and and so on, rather than all this. And another pet peeve of mine, I think, is the people that use terrible language at home and then wonder where mm-hmm. their children picked it up and whipped them for it.
Oh, I know.
I find that is so inconsistent and so... if they just think about what they're doing, I don't believe anybody would really do that, but we do so many things without thinking, I guess. Well, thank you very much.
Right,
okay.
Thank you for the call.
Well, I appreciate the comments. Anything else that you'd want to say, sort of following up on what the caller had to say?
Well, I really like what she had to say about respect for the other person, in this case a child. As I was preparing for the program, I began to realize that most of what I was thinking about for children also applies to coworkers, friends, people you're supervising, just other human beings that you're relating to. So in general, I think her point about there shouldn't be two classes of people, big people and little people, is very well taken.
Hmm. Well, let me, just sort of a thought pops into my head that some people might say that, you know, one of the differences between adults and children is that you can reason with another adult, but that some children, at least little ones, you really can't reason with them the way you can with an adult. And there's a certain point comes where you've got to say, look, I'm not going to try to explain this to you. I'm just going to tell you, this is what we're going to do, and that's it.
Right.
Is that a wrong way of thinking?
No. I think that you can give even a small child a reason. Now, that doesn't mean that child is going to really comprehend that reason. They may or they may not. They may and they may not want to. But I think it's important that you always give reasons. I remember my mother always gave me the reason she was doing something. I never remember her saying, because I said so.
Mm.
And I have older brothers and sisters, and that was, and they were left in charge of me a lot, and that was their reasoning, because I said,
because so. I said so.
And it made me so angry. I can still feel the anger just welling up in me just thinking about it. And she'd never pulled that kind of power play on me. She always explained things to me. I didn't necessarily agree, but I knew her reasoning, and I think it's important that our children know what our thinking is. And you can start long before a child is really reasonable, in quotes, because if they are in the habit of hearing the reason and hearing your thinking, it'll gradually sink in. And they'll be much less likely to be resentful if they have a reason. Now, there does come a point where you have to cut it off, where they're just going to argue and argue. And I think the important thing to remember there, as the caller just before this said, that you are the person in charge. Because you're reasonable with your kids doesn't mean you're going to let them take over. And you're going to have to say, this is how it's going to be now. I've given you my reason, and this is how it is. I've seen a lot of parents who are having a lot of problems feel that the impetus is on them to convince the child of the rightness of what they're doing. And it's the other way around. I think you ought to be open to reasonable arguments from your children. And if they think something's unfair, let them tell you why. In the end, you are the one that has to make the decision. You are the parent. You are the person in control. And I think that's important to remember, because as much as children are going to fight for power, the child who's really in control is very insecure, because he or she doesn't know really, they don't have the experience to make the decisions, and they really don't know where the limits are.
Okay. Another caller here. We're getting some other callers here. Let's go to the toll-free line again. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if your guest had read the book by Dr. James Dotson called Dare to Discipline.
No, I haven't read that one.
Okay. His way of looking at discipline, and I guess he would disagree with you about spanking, is that you don't spank for mistakes, but you do spank for people who are outright going against proper authority, just as our government would punish people who are criminals. Parents would be allowed to spank children for open defiance. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't agree with it. I allow my kids defiance in attitude, not necessarily in actions. When I've imposed a limitation on them, let's say, and they don't agree with it. My 10-year-old son is fond of telling me that he hates me in not the nicest tones, and I usually tell him, that's your privilege. You don't need to like me. It might make our life together easier if you did, but that's your privilege. You're entitled to your feelings. And usually he's confined to his room until he calms down. But I think if you're showing respect to your children, on the whole, they're going to show respect to you. I don't think in this modern day and age we can any longer assume that their respect is a given if we don't show respect to them. And I think it goes back to what the caller before said about having two classes of people, big ones and little ones. And in general, I find that people that show respect to their children get that respect right back.
So you would feel that any kind of spanking is not respecting their children?
Well, I think basically yes, unless it's for something dangerous, like the example I gave of a one-year-old running into the street.
Mm-hmm. And you don't think defying authority is something that's dangerous in the long run?
I think there are other ways to deal with it that are more effective and better.
Oh, okay. Just one final comment. I know a lot of Christians follow the Bible that says the father who spares the rod hates his child. And I think you may have problems trying to convince us that the Bible is wrong. Thank you.
All right. We are here about midway through our program. We have a couple of other callers waiting. We will get to them in just a moment. Our guest this morning is Sylvia Trist. She's a certified social worker in private practice in our area. She's with Conflict Resolution Associates. We're talking this morning about discipline. And if you have questions or thoughts to share with us, please call. We have some other people to talk with here as we talk with Sylvia Trist. We're talking about discipline. If you would like to be a part of the conversation, you can pick up the telephone and give us a call. 333-9455 is the number locally, a toll-free 800-222-9455. Something else that I'd like to have you talk just a little bit about, it's very much related to what we have been talking about, and then we'll want to get some more callers in here, is the whole business of communication, in the sense that I think often that maybe some people who have difficulty with the discipline issue with their children have a problem because they haven't really clearly told their children what they want, and that may be tough. But if your kids really don't know what you want, then how is it they're going to conform to your expectations?
Yeah, good point. An example that comes to mind that's in a slightly different field is when someone's driving me home and I forget that they're not inside my head and they don't know that they're supposed to turn left at the next block and I've forgotten to tell them. Well, that's the same sort of thing with our kids. If we don't give them clear directions, they don't know what direction to go in. I know when we visit my mother in Detroit, sometimes she gets angry about things that she assumes they should know better, but those aren't necessarily rules in my house. And she gets very angry and upset because the kids have done whatever. And I say, but Mother, those are your rules. You have to let them know. And it's very important to let our children know exactly what our expectations are, because otherwise, how are they going to know? How is the day supposed to be structured? How is my life supposed to be lived? So talking to them, just telling your kid what you expect, telling him or her what you want changed if there's something you don't like, and why. Again, that reason. I think it's very important the kids know your reasoning, because they're not going to adopt your system of thinking, which is ultimately what you're trying to achieve, if you don't let them know what it is.
Mm-hmm. I think the other thing that's also really tough is consistency. If you're going to have if you're going to have expectations, and if there are going to be consequences, if this whole business is going to work, it's got to be the same all the time.
Right.
And if you're maybe some days you're really going to stick to it, and other days not, that's just not going to work. If you if when kids are at home and at the dinner table you want them to sit down and eat, and they're running all over the house and crawling under the table, and you let them do that, and you take them out to a restaurant and they start doing that and you whack them, they're going to think, well, now what's going on here? Why is it that we've got the same situation but we've got different sorts of rules?
Well, that's not exactly the same situation.
Maybe it's not the same situation.
I think that kids can learn that there are different standards for different places. For instance, grandma's rules are different than mom's rules. And if their parents are divorced, rules at dad's house are different than the rules at mom's house. And it's all right to run around in your, maybe your shorts at home, but you wouldn't wear that to a restaurant. There are different standards for different places. I think the main thing is that we make it consistent, that we make it clear what they are. And if we're expecting them to act one way, if we have guests, I think it's unreasonable to expect they're going to act a whole lot different just because there's somebody else there. And I think a lot of parents have that expectation. Well, we have a guest. We need to be on our company behavior. But if you have what you consider good behavior most of the time in your home, then when you have guests, it shouldn't be a problem.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I tell you what, we have callers, and rather than make them wait, let's get back to the phones here and talk with them. Line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have been listening along, and we've had two opposite views expressed on the issue of spanking, which is punishment, and I think that should be separated from the issue of discipline. The word discipline comes from a Greek word that means to learn. I mean, a disciple is a learner, and to discipline is to teach. And I don't think punishment necessarily is, it does have a form of teaching, but it also is it's a way of dealing with basically breaking either the laws of nature or the laws of society. And issue of spanking and punishment again here. I've noticed that the first person said that spanking is a big person versus little person issue, and that you agreed, and you also said that you should only spank for some dangerous situations. And I'd like to, with the second caller, I'd like to say that I agree that spanking should not ever be for those types of situations, but only for against authority. I mean, and I know this is completely disagrees with what your position is, and I think that's, you know, and I think we have a right to disagree. My concern is over the issue of what would happen, you know, in a position where there's some strong feelings in this situation, and a person does spank a child, and somebody, like caller number one, calls the authorities. Would there be a problem for normal spanking for, you know, where society takes that child away? And I've heard of situations where that takes place, and I believe that is not because people are liberal, because liberal implies freedom. It implies, to me, a form of repression that is utterly abhorrent, and I'll hang up and let you talk.
Oh, hold on a second. Don't go away, because I'm not sure that...
Who is utterly abhorrent? The agency that takes the child away, or the parent that spanks the child? I'm not clear.
The agency that takes the child away.
Okay, thank you. I think that is really not my province. That I think you'd have to talk to someone from Department of Children and Family Services, because they are the agency that handles that. I have heard of cases where, from what I heard, I thought it was overreaction. But since I was not really in on the details of any of the cases, I can't really take a position on that. I think you're correct in saying that discipline and punishment are not the same things, and the topic of our program today was discipline rather than punishment. I think ordinarily, if you're giving a child a spanking that does not do any bodily damage, tissue damage, I don't think that anyone's going to be able to turn you in with any success to the Department of Children and Family Services, because as far as abuse, that's generally what they look for. Are there any marks left? So that's all I can tell you.
Well, I've noticed, I said I was going to hang up, but but I have noticed in certain situations where a child is just seems to be totally out of its mind, and it cannot get itself under control under certain and a non-damaging physical shock sometimes brings the person that child around. So, like, say, oh, and they're thankful for that situation, and they are, and they love the parent more for doing that.
Well, if that's what you feel you need to do, I think probably one smack would do that. Also, you have to run your family the way you see fit. You know, I'm here sharing what I've learned from working with a lot of families and from raising my own family, but whatever you do in your own family has to fit your values and what you want to do. So I'm not here trying to tell you how to run your family.
Oh, that's good. I appreciate that, because sometimes I think people think that society ought to step in and they take over, and it comes over where society puts the family under too much control, where the family deserves more freedom, and I think we're based on freedom. And I would appreciate, you know, I really like the idea of what David was bringing out earlier about some of the areas of discipline and training and teaching, and I thank you for that, those comments.
Okay, thanks for the call. We have some other people here. Let's go to line two. Hello.
Hello. I have to align myself on the side of the anti-spanker. we had a situation in our family with the older kid beating up on the younger kid, and I realized that if I was going to spank him for hitting the younger kid, that I really was not modeling the kind of behavior that I wanted to see him emulate. And I'm also very bothered by society where I see so many males beating up on their children, beating up on their wives, raping women. Every time I open up the paper, it seems that there is someone beating up on someone else, and it has to stop. And it seems to me that the first place it stops is in our families. There are ways to teach children respect for legitimate authority. It's also important to teach children how to recognize illegitimate authority. I don't want my children blindly in fear of people who are in authority over them. I want them to understand why people deserve authority, when to question authority, and I really strongly feel that if you use violence, that you're not using your imagination. I didn't have a whole lot of role models in terms of figuring out alternative things to do, but I did a lot of reading and came up with some other things that worked. One of them was the Family Fine Jar, which I got from a book by, I think the author is Dr. Kiley. And his philosophy is firm discipline, but not violent. And to have a family fine jar, the kid has to have an income, and so our kids have had small allowances for quite a long time. And that's a whole other issue. I've found an allowance to be very helpful. But one of the things that I found about the family fine jar was that it worked well for the times when we needed it, and it works in situations when you're out in the car and you can't put a kid in isolation. It works when you're with company, and you can adjust the fine to suit the kid's income, and you can increase it until you get the behavior that you need. I think it's important to balance it so you don't have, so the kid doesn't feel totally bankrupt the whole time. And I also found that in our family with the sibling rivalry business, which was driving me bananas for a period, driving both my husband and myself bananas, that holding the apparent victim in part responsible for the situation, in addition to the one who hauls off and clobbers him, took the parent out of the role of being the judge and taking sides. And also made it clear to both kids that it took two people to create the situation. And oftentimes, what was happening was the younger one would set up a situation that would drive the old one batty, and then we would just hear the clobber happen. And so we were stepping out of that and putting the responsibility on the two kids to work out their relationship.
Boy, you've raised a lot of really good points. I appreciate what you say about sibling rivalry, because I think a lot of parents feel like they need to control the relationship of their children. And I have grown to feel that you need to step in if they're seriously endangering one another or if the balance of power is really grossly unfair. However, it's true that usually the kid that clobbers is the one that gets punished, whereas the other one has usually needled and harassed and so on and gets away with it. So I think that by stepping out of this arena as much as you can, you allow the children to regulate their own relationship with one another. And after all, when they're grown up, they're going to have their relationship with each other without you controlling it, and their relationship with a lot of other people.
And I want my kids to grow up being able to figure out for themselves what is right and wrong, and not having somebody else tell them, and not doing something because somebody might catch them doing what they're not supposed to be doing. I want them to have an internal sense of what is right and wrong, and I want them to do things that need to be done because they're doing it to please us, or not because they're afraid of us. And I think it has worked out well. We have a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old, and I would say that, of course there are always ongoing testing going on, but I'm really pleased with our relationship. I really enjoy both kids, and I'd say that we keep my fingers crossed because we haven't really fully hit the teenagers. But
oh, I'd say you're there.
But I'm pleased. I'm really enjoying them, and I don't think I would have that situation if I were hitting them. I really don't. And it's so easy to become really angry and to lose control. And again, I really feel strongly about this whole violence issue, and I think that as a society we had better figure out how we're going to raise, in particular, our men better. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any thoughts following up on that?
Yeah, I, too. I liked what she said about the violence, and one of the things when I got prepared for this program was I said the discipline was not, it's not power over another. And a lot of punishment is based on that, that somebody is stronger and can do something to you. So I think if we're going to get to where people have their values internal about good behavior, it's got to come, as she said, so that it's from within and not because somebody else is going to do something to you. And then she also pointed out, she said she didn't have many role models, but she's done a lot of reading. I think that's one great boon that parents of today have that our parents and grandparents didn't have. They just had their own parents to look to. I think today there's a lot of knowledge about parenting. There's a lot of writing. There are a lot of books available. And I think we can learn how to be better parents in a way that our parents didn't have that chance.
Okay. We're getting close to our last, five, 7 minutes. We're talking with Sylvia Trist. She's a certified social worker. We're talking about discipline. We do have another caller here. I want to make certain that we get in here on our toll-free line. Hello.
Yes, hello. I just have one short question. I don't know if it really deals with discipline, but one thing that drives me crazy about little kids is they're always, I understand why, but they're always asking questions. I mean, it's always why and where are you going, and then just keeps going on and on. How does one, you know, if you're busy doing something, you really don't have time to answer all those little questions. You know, I know they're just trying to learn, and we should be there to help them, but is there some way to make that situation good for both people?
Well, what you could try is naming a time when you will answer questions, saying, is this for your own children?
Or? No, I don't have any children right now. There's just neighbor kids, and down the line we do plan to have children. I just want to kind of know how to deal with it.
Well, if you're busy at that time and you're willing to answer questions, I think your options is, if they're not your children, is to say, I don't want to answer any questions. Or to say, I'm busy now, and, you know, in half an hour or tomorrow, I know a lot of those questions are going to disappear, but you can say, I can't take the time to answer them now, but I am willing to answer them in 5 minutes, in half hour, tomorrow, whatever, so that they will know when, and that way they learn to show respect for your needs, and you in turn show respect for theirs, because those are their needs to learn. You were right there.
Okay, I guess that's all I need to know. Okay, I guess I'll learn once I have my own children. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. You know, we started out saying discipline is not punishment, and very quickly seemed to get into issues of punishment.
Right.
And I suppose what I keep thinking about is, well, yes, discipline is not punishment, but to make discipline work, there have to be consequences. Or sanctions or something. And depending on, you know, some people might say, well, this is just a matter of semantics, you know, that you can say consequences, but what you're really talking about is some negative outcome that you can say, if this thing doesn't happen, this other thing will happen, and you really don't want that to happen. Now, when you think about consequences, what is a good way to try to devise things that they will have the desired effect and yet are not going to be harmful?
Well, there is, I see kind of a three-stage hierarchy here. Mm-hmm. First, you talk about it. First of all, you tell the child what your expectations are, and then you say, well, this and this is what I expect, hopefully beforehand. Then something goes wrong, and you can try an I message. an I message tells how you feel about it. You're not calling the kid a name. That's a you message. You dummkopf, or you stupid so-and-so, or you inconsiderate, whatever. That really hurts a person's feelings when you call them a name. But if you say, it really made me feel bad, or my feelings were really hurt when, or I was frustrated, or whatever, you tell how you feel. I felt such and so, and you tell them why, and you tell them what you want to have different, what result you want. You can try that first. If that doesn't work, then you can go to consequences, and consequences can be either logical or natural. Natural are the best, but sometimes natural consequences aren't available, or they're too dangerous, or they take too long. Letting a one-year-old run out into the street, yes, maybe the one-year-old will learn that he'll get hit by a truck, but that might be a little late. Same thing with a hot stove and, you know, some other things that just don't work. Now, one area where sometimes you can do natural and sometimes you can't is like if, say, an 8 or a 10-year-old doesn't want to do her homework. And the natural consequence is she'll get in trouble in school. She might get a detention, whatever. Now, that depends on your school. Some schools take it very ill if you let that go to a natural consequence and they feel like you're not cooperating. I think if you want to do that, you need to talk to the child's teacher or principal or both and work out that that's what you're going to let happen, so that you're not protecting the child. Another thing would be if the child is leaving late for school, not getting there in time. And a natural consequence from your point of view is that they'll get whatever consequence the school has designed. Now, they're not natural consequences in that they're set up by the school, but from the point of view of the home and forcing them to do homework or forcing them to be school on time, there is a consequence already there waiting. It is real important to have your consequences be fairly logical and make some kind of internal sense. One that sticks in my mind that didn't is a 13-year-old girl who was grounded for 2 weeks by her stepfather for sleeping at the wrong end of the bed, at the foot end of the bed, because it was hot and she got a breeze down there. That was last summer. And I guess his idea was, you didn't do that. And my question is, why not? And who is it going to hurt? So I think when you're setting up consequences, they have to make some kind of intrinsic sense, and you also have to make sure that they're reasonable at all to expect that kind of behavior.
I'm sorry that we're going to have to stop, but we've come to the end of the time, and there are a lot of things that we could have talked about we haven't touched on. Maybe we'll have to try and do a part two and get to some other issues and have you come back.
Sure, that'd be fine.
Well, we'll have to leave it at that. Our guest, Sylvia Trist, is a certified social worker with Conflict Resolution Associates.